Well, we actually have a listener from Brazil listening this evening. Could that be him?
São Paulo. Yes, it could well be. Hi, Joe, if you're listening.
And there we are.
Great.
Yet another coincidence. Chrissy, you're looking very animated behind there. I believe you may have some more questions. Do you want to do them now? Or?
Yeah, I'll do the first couple.
First couple. They're keeping you busy, Kevin, aren't they?
Okay, the first couple, there are a few more that are coming through, but I haven't managed to note them down yet. The first one is from Lisa Kate. What is the longest that it has taken you to complete a track?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Normally they happen quite fast. Literally, I would say probably a day or two to produce a track. But there have been occasions where something has almost been finished and there's just been something wrong with the mix. The way I work is slightly different to the way traditional recording process takes place. I mix as I go along, because my idea is that, rather than just record all the sounds and then add effects later, to me a sound is not the sound I'm after unless it has the effects on to start with. So I'm very much blending and mixing as I go along as part of the composition process. And sometimes I'll have everything in place, but it just is not sounding right. And that's what takes me the time sometimes, just to work out what's wrong with the mix. And often it's very, very simple to fix, but it takes me ages to work out what that simple thing is. doesn't happen very often. Normally it's quite fast, but one example of that was on the Light from the Pleiades album, the Dance of Electra track at the start. Very complex track with lots and lots of tracks and automation going on. And it just wasn't sounding right, and it was... I suppose that must have been 2 or 3 weeks to sort that out. On this particular album, the most difficult mix was the Soul Horizon track, which will be coming up next, but I'll tell you about that when we get to that.
Okay. Lisa's actually just popped on and just said that she actually mixes as she goes along too. So.
Ah, brilliant. Well done. I know exactly where you're coming from.
The next question is from David Kahn. He said that he read an interview you have done with,
Serge Kozlovsky.
Vangelis Spiral album blew you away. Sorry, I can't read my own writing now. Have there been any other albums that have affected you like that?
The Spiral album was the album that actually got me into synthesizers in the first place. What happened was I heard a track on those of you in the UK may remember the old BBC Nationwide programme that used to be on just before the news.
Yeah.
With Michael Barrett. And there was an article, it was on the drummer Ginger Baker from Cream. It wasn't about Cream and his drumming, it was about the fact that he'd moved into owning racehorses, and the article was basically about that. But there was this shot of Ginger Baker on horseback in slow motion, I remember it quite clearly, with this amazing music playing in the background. So back in the days way before email and the internet, I wrote a letter to the BBC asking them what the music was. So I could only have been about 14. And they wrote back and told me it was 3+3, which is the last track from the Spiral album by Vangelis. And it took me ages to find this album, but I think it was... I found it in W.H. Smith's in Ealing Broadway. And I bought the album and absolutely fell in love with it straight away. And in fact, lots of Vangelis' early albums I love as well. Albedo 0.39 is a classic.
My favourite indeed, that is. That and China, Albedo 0.39.
And I was just going to say China as well. But those were the big three for me. But prior to that, I think I mentioned it in the Serge Kozlovsky interview, the album that stopped me giving up music altogether, which happened around 1978. I'd reached about grade 3 learning classical piano.
Yeah.
And I got thoroughly fed up with it. Scales every night. Couldn't go out in the street and play with my friends because I was doing my piano practice. On the point of giving up. And a music teacher, it was my last year at junior school, played tubular bells in a school assembly. And it was like a light switch going on in my head. And I had to have this album. I banged on at my parents for ages and they bought it for me. I got it for Christmas, I think, that that year. and it completely turned me around, and I fell in love with music, started writing my own compositions, and I wouldn't be here now had it not been for those two landmark albums for me.
Actually, we should all go out and buy Tubular Bells and thank the world that you did listen to. I mean,
well, I've got a copy of it. I've got two copies. I've got it on vinyl and on CD. The next question is from Lisa. Again, she said, do you ever work on more than one track at a time?
Very rarely.
I'll follow that up with the second question, which was from David Kahn, who actually expanded upon that and said, do you ever work on more than one album at a time?
Okay. I don't think there's ever been an occasion where I've been working on more than one track from one album at a time. But I have actually overlapped albums only on one occasion, and that was I was finishing off Summer, but also working on the beginnings of Light from Andromeda at the same time. So I suppose, having said that, I've just also answered the first question, so I must have had two tracks going on at once.
And one final question from Lisa at the moment. And she just said, and I know the answer to this one anyway, but she said, yeah, you will do. Are natural sounds difficult to source? And do you record your own?
Right. Well, yes, I do record my own natural sounds. With the early albums, I used to get up very early in the morning locally and go and sort of hide in woodland and forests and record the dawn chorus.
I want to stop you a minute, because yes, you do have a funny story to tell.
Okay, yes. I was hoping you were going to ask. Yeah, I know which one.
But
I know.
We won't go there yet. We carry on.
Yes. I'll tell you that one later on.
Yeah.
I record all my own natural sounds. I'd never use samples. And sometimes I will actually overlay some of the recordings to create the effect I want. One good example being the Sea recordings on Summer. I think it's the Hidden Cove track, which has actually got distant waves from Big Brion Sea in Devon, seagulls from Hope Cove in Devon, mixed with some close waves from Capitash in Turkey. So it's a very multinational seascape.
Like this?
Very much like that, yeah.
And this is that track, isn't it?
It is, yes, that's the sequence I'm talking about.
Do I hear the occasional seagull in there as well?
Yes, they're from Hope Cove in Devon. Whenever we go on holiday, I always have the recorder with me.
Do you do that as well then? I mean, we do that now as well.
Yes, I've always got my little sound recorder. It drives everyone nuts. I'll disappear with my recorder for half an hour. But you've got to be amazingly remote to get any decent recording. It's amazing how, you know, even in the middle of what is apparently open countryside, you've still got little farm generators buzzing away in the distance or distant aeroplanes. It's very hard to get a totally silent recording.
Yeah, we can relate to that completely. I mean, we were down on the beach of at Turkey and Alanya the other week.
Yeah.
And I thought, lovely sea sounds, beautiful. It just wasn't too powerful. It was just about nice and just gentle. And all of a sudden, in the background, three or four hotels back, a good almost 700 yards.
Yes, that's it. I know the syndrome well. The other problem with the sea, of course, is it can very easily sound just like white noise from a synthesizer when you get the recording back. So you have to be at the right distance and the waves have to be the right sort of power and so forth.
It's like as well, isn't it? Like a stream, a mountain stream. People think, oh, just put the mic under here. But it sounds like this, does it?
Yes. Very much like that.
The smaller the stream, the better, really, isn't it?
Yes. The secret is getting at the right distance away. The further away you are, obviously, the quieter it'll be, but you also can sometimes capture birdsong as well in that, whereas if you're too close, you'll lose the birdsong, and it'll sound artificial, because it'll sound like a toilet flushing almost if you're too close.
It's true, it does. Tell us about the next track, which actually is Forest of Enlightenment.
Okay, Forest of Enlightenment was one of my favourite images that Jao produced. It's this wonderful misty forest landscape with a couple of light beings moving along the pathway through the trees. And I sort of have two elements to this track, really. There's a key change that sort of occurs, and then it goes back to the original key. And in my mind's eye, one theme represents the sort of natural forest world and it uses a cor anglais oboe sound to carry the melody. And that alternates with a more spacey section to sort of convey the sort of more spiritual aspect of the landscape. And it's also my towards the end, the track sort of evolves. And I remember in the studio, it was very, very early in the morning, sort of 2 or 3 in the morning. It was quite a late recording session. And I suddenly felt the urge to sing the melody. Again, one of the sort of unexplained things. Never done it before.
Yeah.
And some people may say, I hope you never do it again. It's actually my first sort of vocal excursion.
Kevin Kendall on vocals.
Indeed, indeed.
Did you put that on the album cover?
All instruments and voices I put and on this. Voices. Yeah.
So you'll get to hit. We'll be coming to Chrissy after this piece of music. Do you want to introduce this, Kev?
Yes, this is the next track from Leaves of Paradise, Forest of Enlightenment.
There you go, Forest of Enlightenment, perfectly at the end. We were talking about natural sounds, Kevin.
Yes.
At the end, it finished exactly that way, didn't it?
Indeed, yes. That sort of final extract there is a very sort of swirly, misty sound, which I use quite a lot in the backgrounds of a lot of my stuff. And it went particularly well with this particular picture because Jao Santos had created this wonderful misty background, which was, again, visually representing how my music sounds, if you like. And there's also a waterfall, and birds would be in the trees. So I tried to sort of recreate that in sound effects as well.
Well, absolutely beautiful, as the album is indeed. And of course, we have some copies to give away on the show. Yes, we know we've given a quiz question out already. We have a winner.
We do indeed.
For the CD, 1 of 2. And
yes, the winner is David Kahn. And the answer to the question, my first album that I released was called Water Music. So well done, David. CD's yours.
Yep. Not Aerial Vistas.
Not Aerial Vistas, no.
But Water Music.
That came along a bit later.
Now, we have gone past 9 o'clock, and I did say that after 9 o'clock, we would give the DVD away.
Indeed.
And okay. We have two copies here. Again, you'll autograph them for us. But you have come up with a really brilliant question. I love this one.
Well, hopefully it'll get you thinking. Okay, the question to win a DVD copy of Leaves of Paradise. This is the question. In what order did I release my seasonal albums? In what order did I release my seasonal albums? That's to win a copy of the DVD.
Yep. Think carefully, my friends. And it's good to see many of you tuning in, tuning on, turning on, or whatever from right across the planet. We are covering so many countries this evening. It's superb. A big hi and a shout out to everyone from Mexico, Canada, the UK, United States, Colombia, United Kingdom, Australia, Germany, and I believe we may even have from
looks
Brazil.
Like we may have João Santos, the artist who did all the pictures that inspired this album in the first place. So that's wonderful.
And I'll tell you what, he's a dedicated OWR fan. He's been on there for some 9.5 hours now. Right, let's introduce the next track, which is track 5 from the Leaves of Paradise album.
Okay, the next track is Soul Horizon.
One of my favourite tracks from the album, that one, Kevin, Soul Horizon, with the King of Crescendo.
Yes, there's a few crescendo moments in that particular track.
Beautifully composed.
It's one of those occasions with that track. That sort of melody came out of nowhere, and it's one of those times when you think, well, am I actually responsible for it? You know, when you listen to it back the next day, having recorded in the studio the night before, it's like, wow, where did that come from? And that was one of those moments, really. you know, you're influenced by all sorts of things, you know, what's going on in life, the people around you and so forth. And another interesting point about this track was that during the animation stage where Jao had sent me the animation for that particular track, and again, this is a great example of how we worked. When he first heard the track, that was the first mix of this particular track had a rhythm track on.
Mm-hmm.
It had a sort of a gentle sort of tambourine loop in the background, giving it a sort of rhythmic centre. And you know,
a bit like Sundial Up You're Dreaming.
I was quite happy with the original mix. Then Jao came back and said, could he have a version with the percussion removed? So I thought, mm-hmm. That's an interesting one. So I went and took the percussion out, and it did work better. It had a much more spacious, grand feel to it. So that's the version that we went for. I preferred that. So that was a great way, you know, he was influencing the music. And during the animation, as I was saying, there was a moment where that final crescendo comes, and I suggested to him maybe we could pan to a different image at that particular point. And Jao, being Jao that I know, actually created a completely new landscape, which is absolutely wonderful on DVD. When you get to that point, there's just this awesome landscape that opens up in front of you. It's just a magic moment. So a good example of how we sort of bounced ideas off one another.
As a listener on that specific track,
yeah,
when I listen to it, get a sense of hope.
Good. It's very. It should be a very hope-filled album, this one. It's to me, it's an album full of hope and beauty and love and peace and... That sounds really hippie, doesn't it? But
wow.
you know what I mean.
Well, I believe you've got some more questions, Chrissy. I've caught her with a sandwich in her mouth. Let's put her on live now. No. We'll wait until she swallows. That's a bit dodgy. Hang on. Sorry, Chrissy.
I'll get you back later, Steve. I've got one question at the moment.
Yep.
And that is from... can't remember who I said. Corey.
Oh,
Corey Alcaruthers. And she wants to know if you would like to tour the US.
Tour the US, wow. Well, if anyone wants to sponsor that one.
Well, there's probably a few people out there that may be celebrating this evening.
Yes, it would be good.
Well, we keep saying about doing an OWR tour of the US. Maybe we could collaborate.
It's all gone quiet.
Yeah. I'd be up for that. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's safe to go over there now. Obama's in for another 4 years, so we could probably do that.
Very topical, Steve.
Well, I got in trouble with George Bush last time because I don't like him, basically. And I said something on the radio about a few years back, and someone heard it and complained. Tough. But, yeah, we could do that. I'm sure that, you know... How would you set up, though? I mean, live gigs
in another
country.
I have no idea how to go about that.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, playing live would be... I mean, I know because I've seen you play live.
It's difficult music to play live. You inevitably have to use backing tracks. It's very much studio-based music. You couldn't, for example, just sit there with a keyboard and produce a sound anywhere near like what you hear on the CD.
Yeah.
Because there's
you
lots
need
of
quite a few of
hours
you,
of
you?
Production and many, many overdubs and things like this that go into the
they
final.
Need to clone you, really, wouldn't they?
but you know, that having said that, it's certainly doable with backing tracks and visuals.
And so it would then theoretically be possible to do some kind of tour based on an album if the money was there?
Well, the finance would have to be in place to...
yeah.
You'd
have to really have backdrops as well, wouldn't you, to accompany the specific tracks. For instance, on this album, it's there already, isn't it?
Very much so, yes. You've got a ready-made visuals for this particular album. But, yes, it could get very, very boring very quickly to watch.
Well, perhaps we could throw that out then, Kev, if anyone wants to sponsor Kevin Kendall Tour of the US.
Yes.
Pledge in some money to your on my website. Hang on, what, we started something off here, I think. Hang on.
Well, I've just been following things that are coming up on the on Facebook, and Corey said, yes, it's always a difficult thing to tour. And then Lisa has actually said, Kevin, an orchestra could play your music live.
Certain tracks would actually work on I mean, that Soul Horizon track, for example, that you just heard, would actually work quite well with an orchestra because it's quite structured and fairly, I suppose, conventional, if you like, although the sounds aren't conventional. The structure is quite conventional. But yes, an orchestra would be even more expensive.
That's what it's about, though, isn't it? At the end of the day,
at it's all down to money, yeah.
But it would be possible if the finances were in place.
Sure.
So perhaps this is something we can throw out and see what happens. Richard Branson, you tweeted me earlier on today. I hope you're listening to the show. And he sent me a message via LinkedIn. So if you are listening, Richard, we want your money. Take Kevin Kendall in the tour of the US. That'd be good. We now have a winner for the DVD. Getting boring.
We do.
It, really?
I think it's David again. Well done, David. You got the answer right first time. The album, I've got to think about this myself now, the album which, the order in which I released the season albums was autumn, spring, winter, followed by summer.
Yeah, the summer one was the hardest one of all, wasn't it?
Yes, that did take me the longest time. I mean, there's almost a 20-year gap, I think, between the between the first and the last. But yeah, summer was the least inspirational season musically. It took me a while to actually get into the vibe of the season. But once I was started, then
now
we were off.
The next track coming up is turning into a little bit of a fan favourite of OWL fans. One of my favourite tracks.
Oh, good, yeah.
Above the Zenith.
Above the Zenith, okay. Yes, this is the next track from Leaves of Paradise, Above the Zenith.
We have more questions coming in. Chrissy is writing furiously away behind us. That is a little bit of a fan favourite of OWL listeners, Kevin, Above the Zenith.
I'm glad to hear it, yeah. That's a good example of one of the two tracks, actually, where we work the other way around. And for that particular track, I was working from the animation that João Santos had produced, which he produced in advance of the music. So if you like, that was a sort of mini soundtrack to the animation. So it's sort of a roundabout phase from the other tracks.
When you're two-thirds of the way through an album, like you are at this stage where we are now, do you stay focused completely on the track that you're doing? Or is there a little bit part of you thinking, how am I going to finish this up?
You're always kind of thinking about the other tracks and the running order, where they might sit on the album. But I still maintain focus on the track that's in production at that particular time. To the exclusion of, you know, I would never sort of start on another track while everything is progressing with a track in progress.
Right, well, we have another CD to give away from Leaves of Paradise. David Kahn has won a copy of the CD and the DVD, so happy Christmas to you, David, early.